I am Elle Penelope, author of epic fantasy and paranormal romance, and welcome to My Imaginary Friends, a look behind the scenes of an author mapping the worlds in my head and making them a reality. Hello, friends. Today is Sunday, August 30th, 2020, and this is episode 83 of My Imaginary Friends. I'm Leslie. So this week's best thing is productivity. I feel like I've become a productivity ninja as I've had a lot of things on my plate and have needed to sort of hone my techniques in order to get them all done and not lose my mind. And I've been feeling really good about the system that I've put in place, which at some point I still do want to do a video on. So I have my paper planner and I also have my online project management system using a service called ClickUp, clickup.com. And it gives me different views of my projects and tasks. So there's like a calendar view, there's a timeline, there's a Kanban board, there's a list. And I've been tweaking my views and adding custom fields that I think I've talked about before. And so each day in the Kanban board list, and that's just sort of a vertical list of cards, of individual cards, of individual tasks, and each column is a day. So I have one for the due date, and then I have the one for, it's called schedule, which is what I'm doing that day. So when I get a new task that comes in, like through work, someone needs something done on the website, there's a bug, there's a feature request, I say, okay, I look at what is already on my schedule. Okay, I can start this next week. I will do it sometime between Monday and Friday, and I will target Tuesday as the day that I do it. So in the when column, I put it on Tuesday. When I go to my schedule board, Tuesday lists all the tasks that I have to get done that day. And then I transfer those into my paper planner so that I can sit it on my desk in front of my face and I can see the list of things that I need to get done that day and then time box it on my paper planner because my daily view has an hour breakdown. And so I just make little boxes. So these days I'm writing between 7:30 and noon with a break somewhere in there for breakfast. Then usually I do a half an hour for email and really quick tasks that come in through email. Then I do my deep work blocks. So if there's a new site build that I'm doing, I'll work on it for at least an hour to 2 hours as a big chunk of time. And then I'll break up the other tasks, usually into half an hour or hour blocks. And I'm also making sure not to put too much on my day because I know that if I have 10 things to do on that day, 7 of them aren't getting done. At most, I can get done 3 to 4, pushing it, 4 is pushing it, tasks on top of the writing. So between noon when I stop writing and whenever my energy peters out for that day, besides the email and, responding to short things, I can fit in 3, maybe 4 other things. And so the combination of that, adding that one column, giving a targeted date for when I'm going to actually do the thing, and that shifts. Like every day I review what I've done, what I have left to do. Sometimes I get ahead and I move things around. Sometimes I'm like, oh, I really can't. Tuesday's not going to work. I need to push that to Wednesday, obviously, because that day already has too many things on it. You know, that combination of factors has really made the difference. All this week, I was getting done everything I needed to get done on my list. I was like texting my friends. I'm like, I finished everything on my to-do list, which isn't necessarily everything I had to do in general, but the things I had scheduled for that day were getting done. And that's such a huge feeling of accomplishment. And it allows you to look on the next day without dread. You know, it's like, okay, I got everything done. And the times when I had to push things off to another day weren't my fault. It was like, oh, I haven't heard back from this person yet, so I can't work on their thing. So I have to push it to another day. But everything that I had planned to do that I had the ability to complete was getting done. And it's just really great. And I'm not feeling overwhelmed. I'm feeling like I have a handle on things and I'm really in that sweet spot and I'm kind of in a zone of feeling like, yeah, this is happening and I can get through this somehow. My writing update. This has been a week of sort of just being a journeyman writer, getting your butt in the chair and doing the work. I have my schedule. I know what I'm supposed to do each day. And each day I work through it. I sit down and do the work. It feels more like work than like creating art. And writing is always sort of that balance between, at least for me it is. There was an interview on the Creative Pen. I think it was the Michael Brent Collins interview from a couple of weeks ago. And he was talking about not considering himself an artist. And that actually made me sad, you know? Like, why? I mean, there's so many other things you can do to make money other than telling stories. If you're not going to consider yourself an artist, then why are you a storyteller? But, I mean, obviously he's entitled to his opinion about his career and himself. And if you view writing as more of a factory and you're kind of spitting out stories to market, not only does it make me sad, it doesn't seem like it's going to be sustainable because of AI. You know, AI, artificial intelligence, are writing books now. And I think that before too long, AI will be able to successfully write to market those books that people are churning out, those same kinds of books that if you don't think of yourself as an artist, you're just a producer of a product. Then when the machine can make the widget and they don't need you to make the widget, what do you do? Whereas if you're viewing yourself as a business person, but also as an artist, and you're creating something unique that only you can create through your lens that has your worldview embedded within it and has something to say and something to offer other than just entertainment value. And there's nothing wrong with entertainment value. And you can do those things. You can have entertainment value while you're saying something. They're not mutually exclusive. But I think the widget view in that strategy, it feels like it is mutually exclusive. And I guess I'm just afraid that the AI are going to make the widget writer obsolete. And those people who have made that their business plan and their strategy are going to find it difficult in the future. And I'm sure they'll pivot because those people are hustlers and they're going to do what they need to do. And kind of a rambling thought. Also this week, I was DNFing a lot of books and I was trying to figure out why, you know, like what is the difference? Because I read a couple ones that were similar and one I was able to finish the whole book and the other I was like, oh, this is a slog. No, thank you. And I was making some notes and thinking about opening chapters. So I'm the type of person who will download the free sample of a 99-cent book, you know, before I commit to buying it. I don't like to clutter up my Kindle, even like a free book. I will check out the look inside before I download a free book sometimes because I don't like to clutter up my Kindle with things that I'm not going to read. And so one book I was recommended and I was trying to get into it. It opened with dialogue, just back and forth, and then you find out the character name on like page 2, and I didn't know anything about them. I didn't know where they were in space and time, what planet they were on. I didn't, you know, and this went on for a couple of pages. And the dialogue, there was like banter. It was kind of interesting, but without any grounding about who the people were, I didn't care. You know, you don't get a long runway with first chapters these days, with so many books to read. And yeah, so starting with dialogue is difficult. Starting with a character, in mid-action, another book started like right in the middle of the action, which a lot of writing advice tells you to do. But again, if you don't know the character and you don't very quickly get something to grab hold to on that character, you're not going to care. You have to have a setting or character details that are described in such a way that you can visualize it and have a feeling around it. So the descriptions should create some kind of emotion that also lets us know about the POV character and what's going on with them. So why should we keep turning the page? It's hard to do, you know, like first chapters can be difficult, but it makes all the difference in the world. At least for a very impatient reader like me. There are a couple of classes that are actually starting September 1st. So if you're listening to this in real time, you probably have a grace period if you're past September 1st by a few days. But Margie Lawson at the Margie Lawson Writing Academy is having a class called Visceral Rules Beyond Hammering Hearts starting September 1st. And Margie Lawson is fantastic. I have done her immersion. I've done her lecture packets. I've talked about her before. So check that out if you are interested. And she's always talking about, you know, empowering character emotions and using visceral language to strengthen these details. And that is very, very much needed by a lot of books. The other class is through Maryland Romance Writers. It's called Writing Kick Butt Action Adventure with Linnea Sinclair, who is also a fantastic teacher. So yeah, those are some things that you can check out if you would like to, if you're in the mood for some craft work. Our Frolic co-promotion is from Not Your Mom's Romance Book Club, and here is a word from them.
Hi, my name is Ellen.
And I'm Ellen's mom.
And together, we host Not Your Mom's Romance Book Club, part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Our podcast is basically like having a book club with your gal pal and her mom who thinks she's part of the gang and won't leave you alone.
Lame, whatever.
Kidding, to a degree. We post new episodes every Monday, and you can find us on social media at Not Your Mom's Rom. Find Not Your Mom's Romance Book Club wherever your favorite podcasts are sold for free, and happy romancing.
I've been thinking of adding a section to the podcast of a theme song for this week. And if this week has a theme song, it would be The World is a Vampire by Smashing Pumpkins. Because, I put that song on Friday night and I was like, yep, this about describes it, which is kind of tough on a number of fronts. So yeah, it was Friday night and it was right after my brother had texted me about the death of Chadwick Boseman. Some of you know that I went to Howard with Chad, and I was a film major. He was in the School of Fine Arts, he was an acting major, and we were there at the same time, and I did work on projects where he was acting. And so when my brother texted me, I was, you know, I think like everybody else, it was kind of like, what? And celebrity deaths don't generally affect me. But the death of someone that I actually knew, I didn't know him well. We weren't close. I don't know that he would remember me, but I did know him. And it hit really hard. Also, my father had colon cancer, and that was another thing that hit hard too. And I was just thinking about legacy. You know, Chad is someone who quite literally changed the world with his work and with what he did. And looking at the fact that he had been diagnosed with colon cancer 4 years ago, and in that time managed to produce so much amazing work in the midst of dealing with his health and, you know, the statement said, going through chemotherapy and surgeries and keeping it private and focusing his public persona on his professionalism. And it's so inspiring. My recollection of Chad from college, and I think that those of us in the film program at the time, because he was pretty well known, you know, we would use the acting students as our actors and we make our films. And Chad was known to be a little bit difficult, not in a diva way, not in a mean or snooty way, but in a way that he was, as I recall it, he was very concerned with excellence and having things a certain way. And when an actor wants more takes and wants to get it right and get it perfect, and we're dealing on, at this point, this is the late 90s, we were on film stock that we had to buy. The program would supply us with some, but most of us bought our film, and film is not cheap, and processing is not cheap. And so you get one or two takes, and you have to move on. And so having an actor who was really focused on the craft so much, I mean, he was an artiste even then. And I do not say this in a bad way. It's not pejorative. It's just, it was annoying for the crew, but seeing how that manifested in the rest of his life and his career, it was evident then. So what I take away from his work and what I think is his legacy, as we look back on what he must have been going through and not shouting about it publicly, not complaining, not making excuses for why he couldn't do things, at least, you know, to what we could see. And the evidence is there. The evidence in his body of work is there. And it's like, you can't let things hold you back. Several years ago, I saw something on TV, and this minister somewhere was selling these bracelets. Remember those rubber bracelets everyone was wearing? And there was like the yellow one that Lance Armstrong had. And this one was a lavender one. And it said a complaint-free world. And it was a pledge against complaining. And I bought a bag of them because you had to buy like 10 or 20 at a time. And I wore one for a while. And it was like, whenever you made a complaint, you were supposed to turn it inside out. My husband wore one too. I think people would ask him about it, and he would comment that, like, the nurses at his job would mention, you know, he was the doctor who didn't like a lot of complaining. And I think about, we seem to be in a culture where everyone is sharing a lot of things, and people feel like their lives have to be public on social media, and every aspect of their lives should be public. And I think some of that is personality. Like, my personality has never been to share every pain and discomfort that I'm going through publicly. I don't find that helpful to me personally. Like, my husband and I were talking about that phrase, I can't even, you know, that people say, I can't even, you know, I can't deal with this, I can't handle that. And why can't we come at our struggles and our tribulations from a place of strength and from a place of trying to find strength from them, trying to grow from them? In today's world, dealing with strife is part of it. And we can, and we have to, and we do. And some of us more than others. So, you know, what I'm taking away is how to deal with things from a place of strength and use his example as a way to achieve and get things done. If he can get things done as much as he was able to, going through what he was going through, then why are we complaining? It's just something that to think about and to remind ourselves of, that yes, we all go through very difficult circumstances, and how we react to them is the measure of our character. And someone who changes the world reacts to them from a place of strength and from a place of putting his head down and doing the work. In a way, my father was similar. After his diagnosis, he was applying for jobs and he was moving forward and he was not allowing it to stop him. And he wasn't talking about it publicly, to a fault, to the point where he didn't want his other family to know. And I question whether that was the right decision or not. But I understand where he was coming from. He was trying to look forward. He was trying to not wallow and not be a victim. And that's just something that we all can learn from. So I think the best way to honor someone's memory is to take some lessons that they were trying to teach, whether consciously or unconsciously. It's interesting because as I'm writing book 4 of Earthsinger Chronicles, Requiem of Silence, I'm thinking a lot about death. If you are familiar with the books in the series, there's a magical system called Nethersong, which is death manipulation. And that becomes even more vital in the fourth book. And because of what I'm writing it's got me thinking about the nature of death. And these are things that I've dealt with in other books, the Angel series, the Eternal Flame series, Angel Born and Angel Fall. I've created this world of angels that has to deal with reincarnation and living many lives. And that world is connected to this world. And yeah, so I've been sort of musing in my work about what happens after and how our ancestors can help us and guide us. That was a brainstorm that I had a while ago as I was struggling with this book. And I think it was a song. I think it was an album, something on the Jamila Woods album. I think I talked about it back then that I had a brainstorm from a song. And the brainstorm was about the aid of the ancestors. And I wasn't sure how I was going to use it or how much it would show up, but it's such a concept I'm sure it's in a lot of cultures, but I know that in a lot of African cultures, there's a lot of focus on, you know, ancestors and elders and wisdom and that coming, being able to take that in different ways. There's a lot of themes about religion and spirituality. And so I'm kind of, yeah, I've been at that part in the writing and thinking about that a lot. So that is it for me for this week. I hope that you all are safe and well and holding your loved ones close and making plans to make your dreams come true. And not let obstacles hold you back. That is my sincere hope for everyone listening. And I hope that you have a better week this week than last week. For episode show notes and to sign up for the Footnotes newsletter, go to myimaginaryfriendsshow.com. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and watch the video episodes on YouTube. I do have conditioner in my hair right now for those of you on the YouTube. If you're wondering what's going on with my hair, I would really appreciate a rating or review to help support the show. And My Imaginary Friends is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. For more fantastic podcasts, go to frolic.media/podcasts.